Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Mully and Henley, up early to start your day with Chicago Sports Talk.
We live, we sing karaoke, we do a lot of cool things together.
Time to catch you up on this morning's show so far.
Grant, top of the keys, step back, top side three at the buzzer.
Final score,
105-89 Boston.
Watching the core three play poorly together was a little bit difficult. They were playing a decent opponent too, but they were completely out of sync. And I would say ultimately that doesn't give you great faith in what's going on with the rebuild. You would like to see them play better together. The fact that all three guys played poorly, all you can do is be thankful they did lose, because that's where we're at in the rebuild.
It looks like you're just a bad team. It doesn't look like there's much of a future there on a night like that. Now, it's a one-off, I get it, but you got to be much better than that.
Mully and Henley.
What the hell's going on in this show?
Taking you to work every morning from 5 to 9.
The Bears have until 3 o'clock this afternoon to decide if they're going to tag Kyle Fuller.
Hey, happy tag day.
Do you think they're debating that right now?
Oh, yeah. About 2:55, they're going to be sweating out. Okay, one more time around the room. We'll take a quick vote. And then is George McCaskey like the vice president in the Senate chambers? If there's a tie, he has to come in and break the tie?
He's more like the guy sweeping the back of the room while they're doing all the mathematics of it. And then the door bursts open, and there's a scream of, there's 10 million more under the cap!
What's up, Chicago?
Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the score. Does the $10 million matter, Brian? Does the $10 million help in a decision for a team that has so many millions anyway?
No.
Projects to have 70-plus million.
Was that a Goodwill Hunting reference, Ben?
Yes.
I got you.
Yes.
I'm a little slow. I'm slow in math, and I'm slow in movie.
I am not very
That was quick. Very good.
Well, it's on reflection. Never at the time. It'll hit you on the drive home.
Guys sweeping, the wild guys doing the math. I know the answer to that.
No! Let me ask you, when you look at the, whatever you call it, franchise day, is this a moment, what's more important, the decision that they make on Kyle Fuller or decisions made around the league that either keep or prevent guys from, you know, allow or prevent?
The latter.
Okay.
The latter.
All right.
You know, which receivers are going to be out there?
Mm.
Are they an obvious upgrade?
Well, Dallas tagged the pass rusher.
Anything's an upgrade when it comes to receiver. But is there anyone that you can spend your money on right now and expect great things from?
He's coming off a knee injury. He's got a.
We'll take him.
Can he breathe?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll take
That's
him.
All right.
Yeah. He's good.
He's getting a new kidney and he's on a. Can he breathe? Is he okay? Is he going to survive? Well, we'll see.
Yeah. No.
They're desperate. They are desperate. No question about it. They got to improve that area. Our buddy David Haw wrote a thing in the Tribune today where he talks about the various programs around town, and it's an interesting story about how the idea that Loyola in the tournament sort of sends a message to everyone. The most interesting stuff is DePaul, I suppose, being honest about it. But next to it is a story about how. The would-be savior of Illinois basketball, Mark Smith, is going to transfer, and the Illini are allowing it. He met with the coach. He met with the athletic director, and they're allowing him to leave. And
do you think they asked him where he intended to go? I mean,
I don't know.
If you're going to DePaul, we're not letting you out.
I mean, he's from Carbondale, so it's kind of downstate. I don't know where he's going or. What his hopes and dreams and aspirations are, but I don't know.
They gave him a no movement clause. You can't go to these schools. What if he went to DePaul? What if he turned out to be Jason Kidd at
DePaul?
He'd
be awful good at DePaul. Yeah. Then he'd be good. I mean, I don't know. It depends on what teams are looking for and how you get back. Why, in your opinion, do you buy this idea, real simple, that the Chicago guys want to get out of town because it's not safe in some of the neighborhoods in Chicago, and they need to get away from the neighborhood, and so they're leaving. I've heard that as a sales pitch or excuse maybe for some of the programs that aren't attracting local kids, that somehow the best players want to get out of Chicago because they need to go someplace where they're not surrounded by friends and neighbors that are going to hang on to them and all that. I don't know that I buy that at all, but I mean, Derrick Rose, all his friends from high school are still all his friends, right? I mean, it doesn't matter if he went to Memphis or went to, your friends are your friends. And I know John Thompson 100 years ago said of Allen Iverson that people don't understand why he stays with his friends. You know, when you grow up the way that he did,
that's his family.
Those guys saved his life. That's how he feels, that they had his back and saved his life, and they all got out. You know, when you have friends that die and, that horrible things happen to, the guys that you grew up with, not just your family, but your protectors, you feel this, we're in the same platoon. These are my army buddies. You know, there's this bond that you don't get when you're not in the horrible circumstance that they found themselves in growing up.
Yeah, I mean, when sometimes your chosen family, your extended family, actually is friends and family, right? That you're not, you move on, and it's
a reason to stay in a way, right? That you get to move into Lincoln Park, you get to move up to Rogers Park, you get to move a nice dormitory at UIC. You get, and you can still keep in touch with your friends. They can still come out and see you. You don't have to go to a new city, a new town. You don't have to try to figure out how the L works or how the bus routes work or how, you're going to get to the airport to fly home or what it's like to be in a cow field. Oh, this is called cow tipping. I never knew. I don't know that I buy that reason. I think it's an easy narrative, and I'm not saying there isn't validity to it.
I think it's part of the equation, but right. I don't think it's necessarily like maybe it was 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that might have been more part of it. But I think it's, how popular is the program? Am I going to be on TV? Am I going to get to the NBA by going to this program? If you have those aspirations or you're good enough, everyone will tell you you're good enough at that age, right? And now, your friends will tell you that, your family will tell you that. You have to figure out who really knows what they're talking about. But, I still think, just take DePaul, for instance. You want to get a kid. How many kids out there want to be the pioneer is going to say, okay, I'm going to turn that program around? And really, realistically, can you turn a program around in 1 year? I don't think you can. So why would you want to be part or have that pressure put on you to be that difference maker? If you're that good and you're on your way to the NBA, don't you want to go to a Kentucky? Don't you want to go to a ready-made program that produces NBA players, one-and-done players?
Yeah, I think, a lot of kids aspire to play in the NBA. And I think that, four-star prospect that wants to do a one-and-done, I can understand wanting to go to Kentucky, knowing that they've done a great job of getting guys in school, get them, a ring or get them in contention, get them exposure with the tournament, and then get them into the NBA. I mean, there's been a lot of guys that have done that. But I don't know that every player – and, I know every player aspires to play at the next level, and I know every player hopes for the opportunity – but does every player really believe that that is laid out for them? I think every player probably believes that they work hard enough that they can get there. But it's boy, when you really stop and look at it, there are 300 plus Division I programs, and how many players are even drafted into the NBA, right? It's a very limited number, and how many players make it a year, and how many players make it big a year. I'm just saying. And I know none of us have perspective, and it's very difficult to teach that to people. And one of the problems that happened with DePaul basketball way back when was unrealistic expectations. And when you didn't hit what you thought was going to be your future, you were the big program in town, and all of a sudden you're kind of wandering around it's all gone.
I can just lean back on the experience that I went through being an alum from Marquette when D. Wade went there. And DePaul, for whatever reason, didn't either get in on him early enough or didn't realize or couldn't get him in school, whatever it was. He wasn't one and done. Now, when he led the team to the Final Four, and there was some question whether he's going to come back for yet another year, another right. season at Marquette. And I remember one of the coaches on the staff said, if he does, you know, the question was, should he stay? And are they trying to talk him into staying? And one of the coaches told me, if he doesn't go, then he's probably not smart enough to get a degree here. It's time to go, right? His stock was never going to be higher. He couldn't take that program anywhere else.
312-644-6767. We're going to switch gears and we'll bring in Mike Florio next. We'll talk to Mr. Pro Football Talk, Mully and Hanley on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Mully and Hanley, we love our opportunity to talk to Mike Florio. Michael, happy Tag Day. I guess that's what we're calling it.
Well, and you know, how many people are actually going to be tagged today? I think maybe one, maybe two. I put the over-under at 5.5 2 weeks ago when we started this process. And maybe at the end of the day, it's going to be 5 or 6, which I guess means I, for a change, set the over-under accurately, right? I thought there was a chance it would sail over that, but we've got Ziggy Ansah of the Lions, Jarvis Landry of the Dolphins, Le'Veon Bell of the Steelers, DeMarcus Lawrence of the Cowboys. Those four we know about, and who knows what's going to happen today. Kyle Fuller apparently isn't going to be with the Bears, but you know, it's there just aren't enough clear-cut star players that you would say, boy, we got to tag this guy and keep him off the market this year.
And we're just, you know, Kyle Fuller, is he a star player? He's a good player. He had a good season. Those two things only happened for 1 year in his career here so far.
Yeah, and that's right. And I think you have to have a concern that if a guy all of a sudden turns it around in his contract year when he previously wasn't good enough to get you to pick up the fifth-year option like the Bears didn't do with Fuller last year, do you trust that contract year and do you trust that the light bulb has gone on and once he gets big money, he's going to be the guy that he was when he was playing for the contract versus the guy he was his first three NFL seasons? That's the risk.
What about someone like Allen Robinson? I mean, this is a guy that I know he's coming off a knee, but the Bears are desperate for a wide receiver. They've talked about various names. You mentioned, you know, Landry. Why would you trade for him? That's insane to me, trading for a guy that you'd have to figure out a way to get a big contract for. And I know there was a rumor out there before that he signed the tag, whatever. I just don't understand that one. Allen Robinson, you know, you're taking a chance, you're rolling the dice, but will he be available?
Well, there's an item on the Jaguars' official website suggesting they're not going to apply the franchise tag. I thought the transition tag may be a possibility for Robinson because then, right. You know, if he signs it, you get him at cheaper than the franchise tag, and if someone offers him a long-term contract, you just match it. But I don't think anybody else is going to feel comfortable with Robinson because they don't know how healthy he is. He tore an ACL week one. And even if he's healthy, which Allen Robinson is he? In his second NFL season, he had 1,400 receiving yards. In 2016, his third NFL season, he fell off dramatically. Last year, he had the injury right out of the gates. I'd be very concerned if I were the Jaguars. The problem is there aren't many great options in free agency at the receiver position, so you could see somebody overpay Allen Robinson, even if it's just a short-term deal. Get him in the fold. I could see the Cowboys, who are desperate for a number one receiver, and Dez Bryant isn't it. If it works out well, then it was a steal, but it would be a calculated risk with Allen Robinson, and I think the Jaguars may be inclined to take the calculated risk of not using the franchise tag.
Mike, how much stock do you put in the combine testing when you see kind of mixed results for Calvin Ridley? And obviously he's still the top receiver, but the Bears in desperate need of a top receiver sitting there with the 8th overall pick. And, you know, are you pressured? Assuming Quentin Nelson's gone and Chubb's gone and maybe all the quarterbacks you hoped went didn't go, do you take a guy like that, or did the testing make you, you know, have even more of a pause than you might have had?
I try not to react too strongly either way to what happens at the scouting combine because it's not football. And we already have 3-4 years of film from the college level on these guys. And I understand there's a reason for doing what they do in Indianapolis, but most scouts would tell you that the medical information is far more valuable than anything that happens on the field. And I don't want to get caught up in somebody who does great, and I don't want to get caught up in somebody who does poorly. There's so much talk about Saquon Barkley because he was so good at the scouting combine. He's got to be the first overall pick in the draft. Well, yeah, and then he tears an ACL in the preseason like Kajana Carter did, and where are you? And you're talking about a position that's conducive to injury and that has plenty of guys you can get round 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, or undrafted who can come in and get the job done. So I don't get wowed by the combine results, and I don't get, like with Orlando Brown, he had a horrible combine. So what? Vontaze Burfict had a horrible combine, and he went undrafted, and the Bengals have been glad to have him most of the time over the past 6 or 7 years.
You know, I think the guy that just wowed everyone at the combine was Shaquem Griffin, and the way that he does it despite having the end of his arm amputated when he was, whatever, 4 or 5 years old. You know, and his brother plays in the league, his twin. I mean, what an unbelievable athlete. My God.
Well, and just think of how good he'd be if he had that second hand.
Oh, my
right?
God.
How many times could he bench press 225 pounds if he didn't have to use a prosthetic hand? How much if those weren't, and if that wasn't an issue? And he's made it work this far. And I think of a guy, remember Jim Abbott, the baseball pitcher? I think it's a heck of a lot harder to be a baseball player with one hand than it is to be a football player with one hand. And I'm not taking anything away from Shaquem Griffin on this. I'm just saying he can do it. And he's on the precipice of it. And somebody should be glad to have him around because he's a great story and he's an inspiration. And look, you get any of your guys in the locker room who are whining and moaning about anything that they don't like. And then you get the guy who sticks up, you know, an arm that doesn't have a hand on the end of it, that'll shut him up quickly. So I think he's a great teammate to have around, a great inspiration in the locker room, and a great player to inspire all the fans and anyone who's paying attention to that team. And that may help him get drafted maybe higher than his talent would put him.
Do you like the idea of changing pass interference to 15-yard instead of a spot foul, or do you like the idea of, well, it's 15 yards unless it was blatantly intentional and therefore we make it a spot foul, and then, you know, that leaves more interpretation up to the referees, right?
Well, I don't mind the idea of two levels of pass interference, almost like when we used to have two levels of face mask, where there's an incidental level and then there's the egregious blatant. Because, I don't want to see the guy who is wide open 40 yards down the field, and he's going to catch the ball and run it into the end zone, and he gets wiped out by the defensive back who's been burned, who just dives and tackles him before the ball arrives. And there's already an incentive to do that if you're beaten for a touchdown, because let's say the catch would be at the 25 and the guy would run it in the final 25 yards. Okay, you're still keeping them out of the end zone. And I don't know that defensive backs have the overall ability to wipe a guy out. They've just been burned by the guy. They're going to catch up to him and wipe him out. But I've never been a big fan of putting a 15-yard cap on it. If the idea is the player would have caught the pass, but for the interference, the ball should be where the catch would have occurred. And I don't know why you want to restrict offense that way. Rarely do we see the NFL implement a rule that restricts offense. The only other one that I can remember is the elimination of the old force-out rule, where, you know, if you would have gotten 2 feet down in bounds, it's treated as a complete catch. The idea of taking away that field position and those scoring opportunities, that's not the NFL that I've known over the last 40 years, and I don't think it's going to go anywhere, and I don't think it should.
You know, you talk about the combine. Quentin Nelson just confirmed what everyone knew, that he's just a top prospect and a hell of an athlete and a great player, and yet he's a guard. Now, can he play the tackle position? I mean, he's going to go off the board pretty high. I don't know where, but I wonder if you have a thought on taking a guard rather than a guy that is going to make a touchdown or stop a touchdown.
Well, look, I remember when it became very trendy to talk about the importance of the left tackle, the Michael Lewis book, The Blind Side, right?
Yep.
Because he protects the quarterback's blind side for a right-handed quarterback. And that's fine. You can have a great left tackle. I mean, the Browns have had a great left tackle since 2007. What's it done for them? Because it's the other four positions that get you in trouble. You need five good offensive linemen. Five good offensive linemen, much better than one great offensive lineman. So we started to put more emphasis on the right tackle, that guy with the pass rushers deployed on either side of the formation, you've got to have a right tackle who can keep the linebacker or the defensive end from getting to the quarterback. And then what do you hear any time that somebody has a blueprint for stopping the Patriots? It's not outside rush, it's up the middle. So guards are more important now because you don't want the pocket to collapse. You want the quarterback to be able to step up and throw the ball. And if he's got guys swarming around his feet, that's not going to happen. So I think we're going to see two developments this offseason that are going to change how we think about interior offensive linemen. One, Andrew Norwell, the undrafted out of Ohio State guard of the Carolina Panthers, is going to get paid a ton of money in free agency. And Nelson is going to be a very high pick in the draft as a guard. And it's important to shore up all aspects of an offensive line. Look at how good the Cowboys' offensive line is, yes, and what that's meant for that team in recent years. So I think that we need to get away from this idea that one position on the offensive line is more important than the others. They're all important. And if one stinks, that's where the defense is going to direct its efforts to get through to your quarterback.
New York Daily News reporting that Stephen Ross, the Dolphins owner, wants in favor of players being able to express their opinion by not standing for the anthem or kneeling. He said now everyone will be standing. Will the league have a uniform approach to this? Will the PA let them do that? And if not, and Ross's logic may be twisted or convoluted, as he said, basically the president, and he's a supporter of President Trump, hijacked the message. So therefore, he's going to make everyone stand. But, are they going to address this in the offseason? Because it certainly seemingly impacted the ratings and popularity of the league.
Well, first of all, isn't it amazing that Ross made these comments at a Jackie Robinson, yes, Awards dinner where he received a Lifetime Achievement Award for his support of equality and inclusion? And he's pushing back against an effort by players to bring attention to a serious problem in our society of police brutality against minorities. Now, I understand, I think, his point that once the politicians co-opt it, then it makes it harder to have the message focus on the real reason for it. The protest gets twisted into something that it's not. But I don't know that saying our players will stand is a useful position for Ross or anyone else to take. Their best solution would be to go back to pre-2009. Don't make the players props in the effort to curry favor with the military. Keep them in the locker room for the national anthem, just like college football does, and then bring them out after that. That's what they should do. There'd be some negative PR right out of the gates, but we would all move on and forget about it. That's the best solution. If that's the new rule, every team, you're in the locker room, period, for the national anthem. That kills this issue, and I think that's the only graceful way out of it. And meanwhile, you got Ross saying these kinds of things while Colin Kaepernick still has a collusion grievance against the NFL. It's almost like they're trying to lose the Kaepernick collusion grievance by having owners say these things, because I guarantee you Ross's comments are now going to be an issue in the collusion grievance filed by Kaepernick.
Great stuff, Mike, as always. Thanks a ton.
All right, thanks, guys.
That is our guy, Mike Florio. Always a joy to talk to him. God, I can't wait for that lawsuit. That should be a lot of laughs just to see what they find, yeah, what they tell. I mean, come
might
on.
Make a sitcom out of it.
Holy God. Let's get to Joe with a scoreboard update.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the score. Exciting times in training camp for the Cubs with Yu Darvish set to make his debut. It will be good to get a sense of, it's the a guy like Yu Darvish knows how to prepare for the season and knows what he needs to do to get ready. But it will be the first time that we really see him pitch in the uniform. So, she's so proud.
Yeah,
she's
sure.
Sitting at home. And I think that as long as he can just kind of look the part. I mean, and he looks the part. You see the guy on the mound, he's 6'5". He's got a lot of different pitches. And whatever he's working on, whatever he wants to get done, he'll be ready when the season opens. He knows how to pitch, and he's had success in the major leagues. As a Cub fan, Brian, are you just looking at the cut of a man's jib when he wears the uniform? What is it that you look for in a spring training start from the new, what would you call him?
$126 million man.
Is it fair to call him the ace of the staff?
I don't know that he needs to be. I mean, certainly is the headline of the staff, because Quintana was already traded for, and mm-hmm. John Lester's in the middle of his contract, and we think we know Kyle Hendricks, there still might be another level for him to reach.
And you heard Boomer tell you it's
Jake's birthday,
and this is Jake's replacement. And all you need from him is the possibility of
two Cy
Youngs
a season, yeah,
every time he pitches.
Yeah, two no-hitters and Cy Young. that's why I asked Bruce what the game plan is, because he threw the 25-pitch bullpen session. Everyone was ooh and aahing over that. Then he was going to start last week and had the stomach illness. But as Bruce said, they want him up to about 100 pitches by the end of spring training. That's the rule of thumb for all their pitchers. You just want to, you know, you want to see that he has command of his fastball. You want to see the different pitches that have made him the wealthy pitcher that he is. You don't want to see injury, obviously. Sometimes you want to see him get into a jam and see if he can get out of a jam. I mean, like what Kyle Hendricks did yesterday. You know, he gave up the hit, he gave up the home run, and next thing you know, he said, okay, settle down and figure it out, and that was it. Shut it down. So, you don't want him wild. You don't want him up there, you know, looking like he's nervous or anything else. And, I don't expect no hit two innings, but I expect two innings, right? I expect maybe a run, a couple of hits, a couple of strikeouts.
Would it behoove him, Dustin, to just come out here and pitch well so that guys like you feel better about it and then worry about developing whatever he's developing?
Yes.
As you go on.
And I honestly, from the fan standpoint, I want him to approach today like it's his first. I'm not saying he needs to go six or seven or a complete game.
He's going to go two innings max anyway.
You know, 40 pitches or whatever. I want 40 pitches, and I want 35 of them to be for strikes.
If he gets
hit, I don't
want
any contact.
You're gonna be hitting panic button here tomorrow morning.
Of course I'm going to be.
Hey, if he's throwing 40 pitches in two innings, things didn't go very well.
No, you just want him to get through a couple of innings and look the part, and then onward and upward, and worry about what he's working on later.
So you don't want him to approach it like a World Series start, is what you guys are saying.
Oh,
you
here
don't want him to get knocked out after a couple batters.
Yeah.
Or
tipping pitches. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, that's an interesting idea. Do you buy this idea, Brian, that you can't learn anything about Yu Darvish in a spring training start because what you need to learn is how he looks in the World Series? You need a pressurized situation to see the best of the guy, or to see if he can be at his best.
Well, until you get him back on that stage, you don't know. You have to buy. You have to have faith that, in fact, that's what was going on there, right? Because otherwise, you have a huge question mark as to what you just spent your money on. Because the rest of the resume says he's a guy who's going to help you get to a World Series. Until you get him back out there during the World Series, you don't know how that – whether that was an outlier and was something that was correctable.
Also interesting, who catches him today? I'm waiting with anticipation for this line.
Well, you know who's catching him.
It's going to be Contreras.
Are you sure?
Joe said, you know,
well, if he's got a personal catcher.
DH today.
If Jimenez is going to be on this team, it's going to be as his personal
catcher.
Didn't
Joe say that was an overblown storyline?
Well, I think Joe's saying that for Victor Caratini to keep him up and running and feeling good. Do you think it's an overblown storyline?
No, but, I mean, don't you need Wilson Contreras to catch him as much as possible in spring training, too? Unless, in fact, Jimenez is going to be his personal catcher throughout the season.
I would imagine he's going to be his personal catcher throughout the season. I would think that's why you signed the guy. Even if the claim was that wasn't the reason, what else would be the reason?
Contreras is catching, hitting fourth today.
There you go.
Okay.
Zoe in leadoff. I don't think we've seen that this spring.
Haven't seen Zoe this spring. This is his first debut today.
Oh. Yeah. What's more important, Joe? Zoe's debut or Yu Darvish's?
Joe wants Zoe to go however long he is, 3-for-3 today, however long he's in there.
So Joe cares more about Zoe.
Yes. Of course he does.
Really?
That's what he said last week when he was on the station. They asked about leadoff, even though he's going back and forth with Happ and Almora. First thing he says is, well, Zoe's in there.
You almost have a proper lineup, too, like that World Series tip of the cap lineup today. You got Zobrist, Bryant, Rizzo, Contreras, Hayward, Russell, Baez, Almora Jr.
All the regs in for Darvish.
Yeah. So Happ's the only Happ's out.
Huh. They're afraid he'd hit a home run and take away the headlines.
There you go.
it's the fear of Ian Happ. Joe? I'll ask you the same question that I asked these guys. What passes for something good out of Yu Darvish today? And really, you know, when do you really, if you're looking for a pressurized situation? They don't open the season with big series. I mean, every game matters.
Hey, that second series against Milwaukee, buddy. Come on now.
Come on.
Jake on the bump for the Brewers.
That's not set.
Darvish won't go in that one since he's a three.
Right.
Pressurized?
Is that what you need to know? He can win in October, right? That's it. That's the only question.
Yeah, if there are any questions about Darvish, it's that.
That's it.
And we'll be watching the season. Pitches tip there.
Oh boy.
I mean,
what if he tips pitches?
If he blows up
and Contreras goes out to the mound to scream at him, and then he gets thrown out.
Because it was his seventh time.
Yeah, it was his seventh trip to the mound, yelling at him. Yeah,
in 2 innings of pitching.
I did hear they're adding that to the scoreboard.
They're adding the number of visits?
The number of visits to all the Major League Baseball scoreboards.
Do you think that's for the catcher, obviously?
So is it like,
what if they don't
pick up
on one?
There'll be an over-under on that, Joe. Maybe we can start betting on that.
Put another thing on the TV screen, I guess.
Yeah, over-under number of visits, 3.5.
No, here's what's coming. The fifth trip to the mound was sponsored by.
There you go. Oh, that's very good. Now you've got something. Yeah. I mean, really, that's something special.
Takes up a commercial. You don't have a commercial break. You just.
I mean, you can ration out each of the trips to the mound. You throw in with other things, but when you get to that last trip to the mound, that is going to be worth some big time money. Or you know what? I personally think the Mully and Hanley show should sponsor the seventh trip to the mound. There's bound to be one.
We can afford the one.
We can afford.
Yeah. I like
please,
the five
Mitch,
because
just
for
the one.
Five, the Mully and Hanley 5 at 5.
We don't have enough money in the budget to do the fifth every game.
Yeah, that could get us in trouble.
Sponsor the fifth spot in the order, Jason Hayward today.
Oh boy!
No thanks.
Wow.
Do we have to? All righty, thank you so much for calling and texting and emailing.
How about every 4 for 4 game that Jason Hayward has, we put $100 to something?
How about this? If Hayward goes 5 for 5, he could lead off.
Yeah.
Then we sponsor.
There you go.
Then we go with the
you get the
seventh trip to the mound. And
you get the pub without the cost.
We'll come up with some sponsorship for every number that probably won't happen. Right?
Perfect.
That way we don't have to pay.
It's always great to be generous when it doesn't cost you anything.
I love it. All right. And most of all, thank you for listening. We appreciate it.
We'll be back bright and early tomorrow morning, live at 5. Please join us.
Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the score.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.